794 Silver June 7, 2008. This is continuing Lecture 1.5 software testing and going on to Lecture 2.1 organizing software collection. But then just a reminder for your software evaluation plan. Write it for a real environment and then indicate what will not be done or done differently for the project here. He's having a puzzled look on your face. We
write it for our real environment.
Yes, but write it what you would do in a real situation.
And knowing that you may not be able to, like for instance, on usability testing, I don't have any kids in my library at summertime, so stuff like that where you'd say, ideally you do this, but maybe you can't for this project.
Right. So that you have two plans, the one that you would do in real life, and then the actual you would do for the project. Okay, program performance. They often have benchmarks for that, and you find in reviews benchmarks. But then you have to check whether the benchmark data are the same as your data. I think in one case they tested how long it would take to build an index for 10,000 documents or 10,000 things, and or maybe the company provided that test result, but it turned out what they had sorted were 10,000 numbers, which takes a lot shorter than it takes to sort 10,000 strings of 10 characters, which takes a lot less time than sorting 10,000 strings of 100 characters. So the performance test sort of needs to have the kind of data that you expect. Or let's assume you're testing response time of a database. That depends a lot on the complexity of the question. But even if you don't know SQL, assume you have a database of data on houses and you want to retrieve over the entire country those zip codes where the median income is above a certain number. But the median income isn't stored. So for every zip code, the median income has to be computed. And then they can sort. That will take time. Whereas other queries may be done instantaneously. So the test data for performance has to be reasonably realistic, representative of what you're actually going to have. Or another impact on response time, obviously, is how many people are online if it's a system that supports multiple people. Right. So hardware configurations may make a difference also. Or on your own computer, how many other programs are running and taking time. So performance testing is not easy. If it's for a database management system for the World Bank, I would call in a consultant that specializes in performance testing. Okay, because you don't know how to do it. Okay, now usability we will talk about a lot more, so this is just very preliminary and short. So ideally you have real users that represent the kind of users you have. If it's to be used by different people, say an OPAC that's to be used by children and adults, you have to have usability tests both with children and with adults. The outcomes may be different. You have no children at all this summer?
Schools are going to be closed.
Can you recruit your own children?
Maybe.
Yeah, you're fine.
I may be able to scare up some kids, but I don't have classes. collapseful.
Right, yeah. Right. You find people where you can.
Yeah. Well, you don't need a whole classful to do usability testing, because if you do like 4 or 5 or 6, usually that smaller number will find all the big problems.
That will be enough. It will help.
Call if you grab them with lunch.
Then, clearly you need to record how long it takes to do certain tasks. Record what features they use.
Yeah.
Now, the other part that's often ignored and it's very important, what features they did not use when they would have been useful. I know I had a doctor student doing a dissertation on the use of history, search history, or history generally, by lawyers, and what they might use it for. And so he asked them what they use it for, and they had an experimental system where they had history available and how they used it. And I had to always say, now, in this task, where else would the history have been helpful? Because the subjects don't necessarily know what's best to do. I mean, generically, the idea is you want the software to support the task best. And subjects don't necessarily know what to support is best. So you have to record where did certain things not get used when they should have been. And what could the interface do to improve that situation? Okay.
Did that kind of testing at the MLM on Toxtel.
Uh-huh.
And when they brought in the kids, they found that a lot of them liked the icons, but they wouldn't go down and read what needed to be read. They wanted to interact with that. They wanted the icons, the stuff that you put the mouse over, and it did something. They loved those.
Okay, yeah.
So they had to change the interface so that they had more of that.
Then record what people have difficulty with. When they used help. Yeah. Record errors. I mean, when they do something wrong, and this could be, I mean, in a retrieval interface, you can make errors. In a word processing program, you can make errors. I mean, you can do something that doesn't achieve what you want. That's an error. How users recover from the error, if they, well, whether they recover and how. And as you look at these data, clearly you need to look at them in terms of the characteristics of the user. In an OPAC, spelling errors are a problem. Right, now, of course, a good OPAC would do what Google finally does, analyze your spelling and make a suggestion what else you might want to search for. So that would be useful to have as a feature. But if not, what else does the OPAC do to help users recover from the error? If you could, recording keystroke data may be helpful, because you can then go back and reanalyze what the people did. But actually, videotaping them would be useful, and those are things you may not be able to do, and those are things we will discuss for usability. In general, these kind of usability tests can be done in a laboratory. So people have what they call a usability lab, where they can have different computer configurations and different users, and they can observe them through one-way mirrors so that the users don't feel observed, and there's all kinds of things you can do there. Or in the field. And the field is called the beta test. And there's actually, there may not be a beta test, it may be an observation in the field. So actually then that may not necessarily be called a beta test. So instead of bringing a user into a laboratory, giving them a document I mean, if it's real process, a document to process and see how they do it, it may be better to go onto their desk in the computer, watch them there, processing their own documents or doing their own searches or doing designing their own web pages, doing their own images, whatever they need to do, doing their own, and check out what how it works. And even from a software producer's perspective, I mean, if the software evaluation is done from a producer's perspective, if they're really good, they will still do that after version 1 is up. So they want to collect data for making version 2 better. And also, I mean, I said you cannot really do formative evaluation because you have the product as it is, but that's actually not quite true. It contradicts something else I said. You could customize it. So if people have difficulty with some operation, maybe you can define a macro. Or you can change the default. Or you can. So the software is not finished as it comes out of the box. It can be modified as it's deployed on the desktop. You may find some plugin that will solve some problems. So there is from your evaluation, there may be changes in the software that you can make, or at least in the way it's used, in the way it appears to the user. Okay, for program impact, that's hard to do. But how do you test how what kids really learn? You have to give them tests. You have to give them. And then if it's a thinking skills program, how you really test whether they develop thinking skills, and what's the effect, really a 2-month effect or a 6-month effect? In education, there are many sleeper effects. In the mortgages, you could do time studies and see how long it takes. That's easy. Quality of decisions. You could have an audit. And maybe the bank has an audit anyway, so they may have a second level of review. Then if your errors are discovered in the second level of review, that would be something that could be, that would be data that could be collected quickly. But other data may take 10 years to find because you have foreclosure rates. And that may take a while. Okay. And also you need before and after. In the mortgage, that may be reasonably easy, because I mean, if you have a 2-tier process by which mortgages are approved, then all mortgages take a second tier of review. You have data on how many decisions were changed in the second tier of review as before and after. You have those data, you can either do it before and after. In other cases, you need to do before and after studies. I mean, you need to think about do before studies. See, because alternatively, you could have control groups. But in education, that's very difficult. If you think you have a better method, is it really ethical to have withhold that method from some people? And so, and unless there are other reasons why you cannot give the new curriculum or the new program to all the students. If the reasons that you cannot give it to all of them anyway, then it would be ethical to do a simultaneous control group study. But if you could give it to all of them, it would not be very ethical to withhold it from some just to find out the testing. So in that case, you really need to think about beforehand and get some testing beforehand. And it's clearly something that is very application dependent. And how do you determine whether the new content management system in the law firm improves the quality of their briefs? Well, there are many ways to do it, but it's hard to do. And you need to have some forms in which you record results. And again, those are things people get into later on. Any questions on the on the method. I mean, this is just sort of a very high level. Exceptional for what to do, but I mean, what really think is the formula for the summative evaluation is something you need to have in your brain and know and think about. The perspectives or aspects of testing evaluation, that's something you need to have in your brain. When I talked about the criteria, you can clearly not have in your brain a 10-page list of criteria. The ease of use and cost and the general issues surrounding that, you should be aware of and be able to use in some. If I do give an exam, it's usually practical problems to solve, but you should be able to have those ready to apply. And I think some of the, because most of the things you talked about, they're so high level, they are things that you should sort of learn and have better, I think. Okay. So, organizing a software collection. Yeah, that's, and again, that's a fairly high level. First of all, what software collection? You may be in charge of maintaining a software directory on the web. Or, I'm not sure they're still printing books on software. I know there used to be quite a few guides to software, which were guides on preschool software, and guides on this, and guides on that. Because they're usually out of date at the time they are printed, so I'm not sure they have lots of them printed anymore. But there are websites. So there's a website that has a directory of preschool software. So that's a collection. You might have an academic library that has software available that people can use in a public library. There may be software available for use for pensions, and there may be only 3, but there may be 25. And once you have 25, you have a collection that you need to organize. In a company, they may have 150 different programs that are used for one purpose or another, and usually nobody has any idea what's being used in the company. But that's a collection, even if unorganized, and it would be helpful, and in the end, be worth the time in terms of saving money for somebody else might need a piece of software. Somebody has evaluated different pieces and how they work for this company. Now the other person, the same. Would be nice to have a collection that's somehow systematically maintained. Okay. So, the steps here are sort of on building a software collection. They will not be applied to the other thing. Oh, the one thing I forgot completely, it's not on here. A school district. They should have, and I think they don't. Oh, I said here, software in the school district. Okay, good. I didn't mention it. But that's actually one where I think it happens fairly systematically. Because software that's used in the classroom has to be approved, right?
Yes.
Just like textbooks have to be approved. So there has to be a list of approved software. And even some states may have a software collection for schools to be used in the state. I mean, not necessarily, I mean, a collection at least in the sense of having a list and evaluations and so forth. All right.
What's the MECC?
That's Yes, I mentioned this somewhere. Where did I mention that?
Statewide organizations like...
Yeah, and now I think it's Minnesota Educational something Consortium.
Okay, that sounds...
Yep. And actually, those may be a little... I went through that update. The Mac and the Microsoft may be a little bit out of date in terms of whether they actually still exist. I didn't... I meant to go through and check, and some things I updated and some things I missed. So,
I just wondered what it was.
Yeah. It's a consortium in Minnesota, and they have some organized... Whether they still exist or not, I don't know, but at the time when there were still out of operation, they have some statewide coordination of evaluating software for schools. So they can make recommendations. I think the approval process is probably still at the school district level, but they sort of help the school district to do that. All right. So for a school system, for a company, for an academic library, you have a community of users. For a software director on the web, you may have a community of users. So you need to determine user needs and backgrounds. And I think, as I told my 670 class, for most of the questions in this class, a good answer, or a good way to start an answer, is determine user needs. That's all we have to look at user needs. And that will determine what kind of software is of interest. So if you're looking at the software for use in the classroom, if that's the goal of the collection, content management software, customer relationship management, gardening software, okay, that gets a little fuzzy, probably not, but there are certain things that are certainly out of bounds, and certain things that are clearly central, and then some things that maybe and maybe not. Okay. Then you can develop selection criteria, which rates, as we had talked about before, and not just the previous lecture, it's the selection criteria lecture. And the selection criteria may differ, of course, if there are various types of software in the collection. There will be different sets of selection criteria for each. And there may also be different sets of selection criteria for different groups of users. Then you can identify software to acquire, where acquire may mean simply to find out enough information on that software to include it in the directory. Okay, so it may not mean buying a piece of software at all. It may just be, and so for that purpose, you would use the sources that we discussed before. Do in-house testing and evaluation. And for many of the scenarios I discussed, you would need some kind of evaluation. And you may then actually acquire, or maybe not, if it's a real software library, I mean, if it's a collection that actually provides access to, then you would acquire it, otherwise you wouldn't. And then you need to start a catalog. This could be handled using MORC if this is part of a library. And actually, the software in that case may be handled simply as library materials, and they are part of the library catalog. And I haven't actually physically checked, but maybe OCL, I don't know whether OCL includes. I suspect that there are some records in OTLC about software. Okay. Okay. And there is a MORC format for machine readable data files. I mean, there are fields in there and there are rules in the ASDL too. It is for an organization. It could be a school system where different classrooms have copies of software. And you can simply handle that as part of the checkout system. It's only a checkout copy. For really managing a software collection well, this level of cataloging is not enough. So you may need a parallel system where there are more data than the MORC format and the cataloging record will hold. And obviously, if you do that, you want to have transfer of data. If you do it really well, you would first do a complete record and then have a Perl script that extracts from the complete record the data used for a MORC record that can go in the catalog and sort of automatically produces it. Which, of course, would require that the data in the complete record, as where applicable, follow the rules from ASDL2. So that all the data are there in the proper format. And for this, I don't know, now this would be an interesting software question. Is there a piece of software that supports software catalogs? Specifically. I mean, that's made for the property data field and it does have the search capabilities that you can search because there are special requirements for that. If not, you would have to define it in some database management system. Preferably not access because it will be very limited in what you can do. Actually, two kinds of libraries I did forget to mention. Let me go back to the beginning. It's sort of implied, but there are these websites that, let me do the PC Magazine. They have maybe 150 programs that you can download if you pay an annual membership fee for free after that, or you can download them on an individual basis for pay. That's a software library, software collection. Any directory on the web, but I did mention that, is a software collection. If a software store, what is the computer store that just, the CompUSA, they just closed all the physical stores and are only available on the web, but Best Buy sells software. Whatever software they sell is a software collection. And all online, an online software store, they have a collection, they need all these things. Okay. There are also software libraries and call that within a programming system. Like if you buy Java, it comes with a library of programming modules. You get the C programming language, there's a library of functions and modules that can be used within lots of programs. So you need a software collection. Or take another example that Delos Digital Library Management System. There's this platform that can use and as plugins many different modules. some that search music, and maybe there are three different ones that search music, and some that search text, and some that search text across multiple languages, and some that support maintaining a multilingual dictionary and what have you. They may have 100. So they have a software collection that has to be organized and that has to be easily accessible, so that if you want to use that system to configure something for a digital library you want to deploy, then you need to know what modules are available and how can you find them unless they are organized in some way. Okay. A lot of this is just organizing a collection like of anything else, which is what you learn through the entire curriculum here. And you certainly would apply this at this point. And so software reuse depends on being able to find software. So if somebody needs a stemming module for a summarization software they developed, they need to somehow be able to find a stemming module that works in the operating system that their program is on, that works in the right programming language, and all that. So they need some way to find this. I think that there, I remember maybe 20 years ago, somebody wrote an article about software reuse, and they sort of introduced faceted specification to the computer science people. Who wouldn't know about that? And so it's, I think I mentioned this before, developing a good index language for giving good access to the software collection is an important piece. Alright, so finally, organizing the software review process. So how this is done? If you are in charge of a computer magazine that wants to publish software reviews, what do you do? There's two ways you can do it. You can hire individual reviewers, and that's first do it freelance. Or you can have your own lab. PC Magazine actually has a lab for testing, and you have staff writers. Okay. Sometimes I do user surveys. So maybe, how the sample is drawn and all that may be problematic. What do you think might be the disadvantage of just using individual reviews that do this freelance?
You don't know how much of a background they necessarily have in reviewing stuff.
It's one problem.
And more eyes and more people trying something, they're more likely to find the problems.
Yes, you don't have consistency between reviews, because you might have one individual reviewer who's very harsh or looking for a lot of technical detail, and another reviewer who's just going for the touch and feel. And as the reader of those reviews, you don't know that.
That consistent reviews is very important. It actually has two levels. There's a generic format for the use that might follow regardless of type of software. But within type of software, it would be important that they sort of imply the same kind of criteria from one software to the next. Okay, so if they do bibliography managers, they should apply the same criteria. So this is magazines. There are some dedicated organizations. And there used to be this organization called Microsoft, which was sort of nationwide collaborative. In the state organization like MEC, they had a process. I mean, they had forms to be done. They had teacher volunteers that they would give some training and deduction to how to do it. So they would incorporate in the reviews, in the reviewing process, classroom testing. And I believe what they did, they just had this group of teacher volunteers, and then they would advertise that they have these three new software packages that would like to be reviewed, and that people could volunteer. Which is much the same as computing reviews, which is a reviewing, they review computing literature, not software. But they have a stable of reviewers, and they send out emails sometimes based on a profile, what's new, or you can go to the website and open your own. And I have a box there, and I can go and see what is new, and I can sign up for a year. And so you could do a process like that. In today's world, you could also sort of organize this like an online community, where people can submit reviews. What does Amazon do? They solicit reviews from volunteers. So these are all approaches to organizing that process. In a state organization or a school district, you would probably want to be somewhat more systematic. And actually, I don't. Does anybody know how school districts actually do it?
I don't know.
Somebody works at the district level?
I know that they solicit. Actually, I do know. I know that at the beginning of the school year, they put out a list of all the online resources and software that's available from central office, and people sign up for what they want, and they have to pay for portions of things. And then at the end of the year, I know you're supposed to turn in an evaluation of what you thought of it. So they are getting reviews from, I think, the librarians mostly, or the media service technicians, you know, the people who are working with it at the end of the year. They say whether they like it or not. So I guess that goes into the vote of whether we get it next year.
Okay. Now, in what the school district could do, they could fold it into the school library media function. And I think so maybe some of them do. So it would be organized from there. They would organize the software collection as well, and then the school library media system at each building could be the coordinator who gets evaluations from teachers. And then then conveys them to the central office. Okay, not the whole systematic piece. But in a school district, it may also be useful for the central office to have people who are specifically assigned to do this, or have at least as part of their duties. On the school building level, the coordinator for mathematics, for example, could also be in charge of evaluating math software.
They can do some. It informally. If you've got a math teacher and they like Geometer Sketchpad, they can call the Montgomery County Central Office and say, I want this. And, you know, here's my assessment of it. And so it's more of a request. And that is how stuff gets ordered.
Okay.
Because teachers want it.
Okay.
But the lady who sits in the central office and orders things, she may read reviews, but she's the one who's managing the collection, but I know she's not doing a formal evaluation process.
Okay.
So mostly collecting things and then taking votes on whether it worked or not.
I see. Okay. There's some more systematic procedure may be desirable.
Yeah.
So these MEC people had a somewhat more systematic procedure. Now, as we discussed, following our common formula and procedures will be important. And in a school system, these days that could be promoted by having a software review form on the web where people could enter the data. And other kinds of support generally means forcing people to do things is hard. If you give them help that makes it easier for them to do things in the way you want them to do it than to do it their own way, then you may get some collaboration and standards. You might also have, it would be useful in the school system to have a site where people can post reviews. And that sort of maintains itself. If it's done well, this in the school system, it clearly needs to be coordinated with the sort of grades, performance. There are a lot of data collected there by students using it. That sort of are collected and used in some way anyway. And so teachers may do a unit with software where they have assignments or grades, or for that assignment, whatever they do, they could input that.
Yeah. I don't know if that's being done.
If they collect more systematically usability data in that process, that would be good. So what about in an organization, a commercial organization, that's large enough to have multiple kinds of software needed?
Somebody in charge of it makes a lot of sense if it's a large organization, because the amount of time saved by knowing what's out there. So when somebody says, I need a software program that does X, they can say, well, we have these two that do X that do it well. So-and-so recommends this one, and so-and-so recommends this one. I think this will work best for what you need. Try this first.
Before they do that, they should do something else.
Ask them what they need to do with it.
They should do more than that. They should engage these people in some conversation about what they do. So in other words, they need to understand the task, which is more than just asking what do you need the software to do. It's asking what do you do, what's your function, what's your job, what does it entail? And then, particularly if this person knows things about software available and what software can support, they can come up jointly with a requirement statement. That's much, much better than the requirement statement you would get just from the user. So, in other words, the process of software evaluation that we just talked about, that you were doing the project, would have to be done. If it's just this one person who needs software support, it needs to be done with that one person. If it's a whole group that needs software, then it has to be done with a group. If it's a whole organization that needs something, and particularly if it's something that's going to be used heavily, then it makes sense to go to a much more systematic process and have focus groups and the works for requirement analysis. So this way you will get a much better handle on what the requirements are, and if you involve people furthermore also in some testing of candidates, you will also get much better buy-in. what often happens in organizations, somebody doesn't really know what's the organization. I mean, some people in the computer science, in the computer department, some, maybe somebody higher up, they don't really understand the needs. They, by some process, get something that's not suitable. And force it on the organization, everybody says, and no, they may have to use it, but they will avoid using it wherever they can and do something else, or do workarounds, or do whatever. So you won't have the effect that you wanted to have with the software. And when then one reads horror stories of that kind all the time. So
friends that work in the IT department that have, in a law firm that have the opposite problem, that one of the partners will order, like, we're getting all new phone system. This is the company we're working with. Have fun. And so then if the software doesn't operate with the systems they already have in place and the hardware they have, it's up to the IT department to figure out how to translate all of that and get it to work with their servers and their conferencing hardware and all of that stuff.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, that's... They've gone through that twice now, the time that my friends have worked there. So within the past 10 years, at least, I've had...
And nobody said, wait a minute, that's not the way to do it?
Yeah, apparently not. Or at least nobody that has the power to tell one of the partners to cut it out is the main problem.
Right.
I know the school system, you get so many things in bundles. It's like, okay, you know, we have this deal going for computers, and gee, we get this bundle of software with the computers, and suddenly that's what everybody's got to use for their, you know, editing or their graphics or whatever, because that came with the bundle. So we get a lot of that. But nobody's usability testing out or reading the reviews. It's just you use what you have. And then there are teachers or particular departments who will specifically request something that's not, you know, in that group. And that's the only thing you have that isn't Adobe or Microsoft or, you know, some highly recognizable name that was included in the bundle.
Okay.
It's sad, but it's true.
Yes, now a large school system, of course, would have the muscle to negotiate within the bundle.
Mostly they're after more boxes. They want as many computers as they can get. And they're not as interested in the software, really, as they are in getting as many stations as they can. Maybe that'll change.
Okay.
But if you look at a school district, they, you know, their statistics doesn't say we have X number of software, you know, or this type of software, or this level of usability.
But they do say students learned X.
Yeah. Yes.
And that may be influenced by what they have there. So it's not that it's inconsequential.
No.
So, but you sort of have to, I mean, you know what should be done ideally.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
And then you have to see what's happening in reality, and you have to sort of see how you can at least tweak it some. Now, remember, you can tweak software.
And you can carefully select some really good stuff to add to the pot. And that's what you do.
So you can get something that will complement some piece for a little money. You can get this shareware piece that will make this work better. So there are things you can do beyond, and they may even be used in system-wide. So if you identify something that will, you have Adobe and it's too complex for the students to use some Adobe graphics program, but you have either some training materials that make it easier, you have some macros that could be used, make it easier, no cost, then you can do these tweaks, and the system may be willing to do them. Maybe even install them on all. I don't know how that can. I mean, it's better to do it before the boxes go out, to install that software on the box, or else have some process where they can have a CD made that you can put in to change configuration and do the thing, which would then at least improve, not to the optimum, but at least would improve what you have there. So I said at the very end in the organization. And probably in the school system, there should be a software review committee Do they have a textbook adoption committee that has teachers on them?
I'm sure they do. I think it's by department. I think like the math department has their own. Each school has an RT who's the main person for the math department. I think they work with other people in the county.
But the math books are adopted for the school system as a whole, right? Not for each.
Correct. So it's got to be going. I don't know. Yes. I know that there are individuals who go to county meetings.
Okay. Yeah. So there is a process and a model in place.
Yeah.
And so in the school system, you could argue to do the same kind of system it should be used for software.
Yeah.
It could be the same committees for all I know. Possibly. With maybe some addition of some teachers who are savvy in computing.
Is this bureaucracy question? I'll try to
find Yes. Okay. Any other questions or comments on the organizing the software you process? On anything else we did today? I know it's a lot of stuff for a day, but I mean, if you go to a workshop, the workshop, that's the same,
mm-hmm.
same dose of things.
Mm-hmm. Like a whole week of Medical Library Association.
Okay, so tomorrow we will spend the morning talking about user system interface. In considerable depth. And on display design, part of it, and I'm going to have to look at my calendar. I thought there was another piece. Sure, there's what happened to my calendar. It's in here somewhere. Play design for quite a while. Yeah, I maybe I took my house on the way. And it's in my office. Can I have somebody's outline? And just give you there are two things we're going to talk about. System analysis and software documentation. And so that will take the afternoon till 3:15. And we'll go home a little early on that. On the Sunday. You will anyway. Yes, tomorrow I just want a paragraph on the type of software. I mean, you can mention a specific title, but the more important part is the type of software you want to evaluate and the scenario you evaluate it for.
Can we email it to you?
Sure.
I don't have a printer, so I don't know
when. Okay. Email is fine. I mean, if you do it tonight, email it to you. I might even read it tomorrow morning. Since I'm still on European time, I'm going to stay in European time. I'll be getting up early.
You're very punctual on your email.
Yeah, I came back from Brussels yesterday and I'm going off to the Euro on Monday. So I might as well stay on the European time. End of this lecture.